Before we get into today's awesome interview with Nicole Sachs, I wanted to give a shout out and tell you about Pain Outside the Box. Pain Outside the Box is a coaching and educational venture on TMS and neuroplastic pain. Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, who is the founder, is a coach and a mind-body practitioner who offers personalized one-on-one coaching, as well as self-paced virtual programs designed to get people out of chronic pain. Her latest program, which is called Pain-Free Breakthrough, is a transformational training consisting of videos, readings, meditations, and other tools aimed at chronic pain recovery. The program will get you to implement TMS knowledge into practice, and it includes an editable workbook where you'll be able to journal, track your progress, and do the inner work. Check out her website now at www.painoutsidethebox.com. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, January the 26th. And before I get going, I wanted to make sure that I give a shout out to all of the Patreon supporters of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, helping keep the lights on, if you will, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. So let's give a shout out to Enda, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Michael, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barbara. Thank you all so much from the bottom of my heart. Arnie and Barb are actually in their fourth calendar year contributing, which is just amazing that they have been supporting the podcast for that long. So thank you to all of you. Again, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. Okay, so I want to give a big thank you to Jeannie Colwin for coming in and stepping in for me last week. Let me tell you what happened. So it has been a hell of a 3 weeks in this house. Basically, my youngest was diagnosed with COVID about 3 weeks ago at this point, 2 or 3 weeks ago at this point, 3 weeks ago at this point. Diagnosed with COVID, and then my oldest daughter got COVID, and then my wife got COVID. And here I am, still standing, 4 negative tests, didn't get a symptom. Kept doing my thing, working out, whatever. Don't know how that happened. I cared for all of them. I didn't mask up. I didn't shield myself in the house. I hung out with everybody. Never caught it, as far as I know. I still have a lingering PCR test that is now 13 days from when I took it, and I am yet to get the result. I've tried to call, and nobody calls me back. So maybe I got it during that point. Now I've got super immunity. But whatever the case is, everybody's healthy now. My youngest recovered in 8 or 10 hours. My oldest recovered in a couple of days, and my wife recovered after about a week. So it's nice to get all that out of the way. We're going to take a big vacation, family vacation to Disneyland in a couple of months to commemorate getting past this portion, and we couldn't be more excited. So Jeannie Colwin, on a couple of hours' notice, stepped in and hosted the podcast last week. She did a breathwork session, which is thank you again so much, Jeannie, for stepping in. This week is a hell of an interview. And normally, I haven't been putting out the podcast on Wednesdays lately, simply because life gets in the way. Tuesday nights tend to be very busy in this house. Wednesday nights a little bit more calm. But I just couldn't wait to get this to your ears. I messaged Nicole Sachs and I had said, hey, you know, I have an idea for a podcast topic. And basically, there has now been 2 years of people having to be hypervigilant around safety, hypervigilant around symptoms. How can they unwind this? Because everything we try and teach in TMS theory and mind-body work is really not paying this super hypervigilant to every little symptom and sensation that you feel. But in a lot of ways, that's what COVID is kind of all about, is being in tune with what sort of symptoms do I have so that you can keep your neighbor or your friend or your colleague or whatever it is safe and away from the virus. So that's entirely what today's interview really hinges on. Nicole and I did this last Friday, and I think it's going to simulcast on her podcast this week, I think. But Nicole's a gift, and I urge you all to listen to this. We did about 50 minutes or so, and I just can't wait for you to hear it. So here is Nicole Sachs and I talking about unwinding from COVID. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As big of a guest as there could possibly be at this point. You know, it's funny because for the last uh, two two or three months, I've been opening the podcast sometimes saying, welcome to the most listened to TMS podcast on the internet as a joke. And then I follow it up by saying, because Nicole's not recording anymore. Because I got a new phone. I thought you were still on hiatus. And you turns out you were not on hiatus for that long.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And so now I told my wife I sound like an asshole. But here you are. Nicole Sachs is back on the podcast. Thank you for being here.
It is my pleasure, Eddie.
So you've been on three times in the past. You have not been on since you started doing your own podcast, which I think has been 3 years now. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been a little over 3 years. I was doing the math the other day. I think I'm on episode 165. So yeah, it's just there.
That is awesome. Yeah, I don't remember the exact topic of it, but I still have moments where it had to have been from the very beginning. Because at this point in time, I kind of think of the segments of life of how long was my hair when I heard this thing. And
<Right.
laughs> you did some episode on basically that TMS was not a... TMS was not a mental health issue or not a mental illness.
Yes. Oh boy. Did that stir up a bit of controversy?
Yeah.
It was called TMS is not a mental health issue because I was trying to highlight the whole, it's not that the pain is in your head kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, it's fun. It's funny after doing this for all the years I've been doing it, I have found that almost anything you say, somebody can find a problem with it. So,
oh yeah,
that wasn't the easiest episode to deal with, but yes, that's what I was trying to say.
I feel like I remember maybe you talking an episode or two later about there being some blowback, but I was going to do axe throwing. I don't know if that's a thing in Delaware, but it's a thing in the Pacific Northwest. I was heading to an axe throwing place when I heard that episode, and I remember just like there were so many nuggets in that, and I found myself even at a couple of parts hitting the back button, you know, the 15 seconds back or whatever to try and recall certain things. So wonderful show. I've been binging because again I thought you'd been off the air, and so I have all these episodes now that I can binge while I do weightlifting in the garage, which sounds like a weird thing, but it is what it is. You're lovely. So
thank you. And I think I took 4 weeks off though, so legitimately I was on hiatus, but then I came back.
Yeah. So I asked Nicole to come here today because there's something that I didn't want to do an entire episode about this, A, because I didn't think I would have the capacity to really talk intelligently about something I've been thinking about a lot and just can't really put the best words into. And you are you're the tippy top of this type of thing. But I've been thinking about, you know, we've had this pandemic raging on for 2 years, and so much of this space in the mind-body space tends to be around being able to not be hypervigilant around symptoms and sensations and everything like that. And then two, trying to alleviate or mitigate just general fears that you have in life, just about anything, family dynamics and your job and just the fear of really doing anything. And now we're in this situation where it feels like we're on the back half, hopefully, of all this stuff. And now you've had 2 years of people being hypervigilant about their symptoms. And is that sneeze? Is that a cold? Is it allergies? Yeah. Is it COVID? But then also just general, like, can I even be within 6 or 9 or 12 feet of this person that's walking down the street? And so those are kind of the core things that I thought about when I contacted you. And I'm sure it's going to spin off into other places, but maybe just start with that. I don't know if it's something that you've given any thought to, but I'd love to just kind of get your initial reaction to those things.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole point of the nervous system being dysregulated is because we don't feel safe, you know, and sometimes that feeling of unsafety is right in front of us. And sometimes it's triggers from trauma responses from the past. You know, there's so many ways that human beings cannot feel safe because, as I discuss often on my podcast, our perception is our reality. And if we perceive ourselves to be unsafe, that conscious perception sends signals to the brain and the nervous system, and the brain and the nervous system only have our conscious perception to go on. You know, our, you know, spidey sense that gets kicked up when we don't feel safe is what sends our systems into, and I won't even say it's always dysregulation. Sometimes it's perfection. You know, I'm sure you've heard me talk about the fact that I was once in London and I stepped out on the street. I looked the wrong way. I stepped on the street in downtown London, in bustling London, and by the time I was back on the curb with the bus barreling down the street, 1 inch from my face, I had no memory of jumping back on the curb.
Wow.
So here we have fight, flight, or freeze in terms of flight, operating in perfection. I 1,000,000% would have been dead. And so, you know, you look at it that way and you say, okay, well, this is why our systems are so on point, because without being alive, none of our chronic issues matter. Without being alive, none of our broken hearts and relationship issues matter. We need to be alive.
Yep.
And so, you know, how exactly can I best focus this conversation? Because I know what you're saying is, here we are, you know, 2 years into a situation where we are basically told it's time to be afraid. And even if you're not afraid in your down to your bones, it's time to act in such a way where we're in a posture of fear. And so where do you want me to take it?
So let me give you an example, something lately that I've given some thought to. So right around Christmas, and as we record this, it's January 21st, and as you're hearing this, it's going to be January 26th, I think, at least on my show.
Next week.
Next week. Right around Christmas, my family just started getting kind of this, like, it was like a close contact buffet. It was like my dad and it was like my brother-in-law. Like we would have a couple of people over, and then inevitably we would get this call a couple of days later and they'd say, I just tested positive for COVID. And then our entire house just shuts down. So we've been doing this for quite some time, kind of just doing the whack-a-mole on, is this the time where the house gets COVID? And there was a long time, probably a good year and a half, where, the term that I've heard sometimes is like COVIDian on approach, but being very vigilant in masking, very vigilant in vaccinating. You know, my oldest is seven and she's vaccinated, and it's been a big piece of talk in our house. My mom's a biologist. She's, you know, she's very vigilant. My brother is scared to death of anything COVID related. He's sure that it's going to kill him and his whole family if they catch it. So like, this is kind of the environment that I've been in, and some of our closest family friends, that's sort of their take on it too, that this is the most dangerous thing on earth to happen. So, we had a real element of fear of it over the last couple of years, and not even withstanding like the upending of school and kids being home and kind of how it's been in our house. And then, but I'd say about, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, my behaviors didn't change. But I don't know if you've heard the story about how essentially I overcame my own really dramatic, crippling fear of flying, sitting in an airplane. This went on for years and years, sitting in an airplane and just being petrified at takeoff and at landing. I had very physiological response to it, but just believing that this plane is going to go down and I'm going to die, and I just can't handle that. That can't happen. And then I got involved in an ice storm on a flight to Dallas, and there was the worst turbulence I had ever experienced, right? So the sweaty palms, my heart is racing, I'm freaking out. And then I just kind of had this real internal moment with myself where I just said, hey, if this thing goes down, it is what it is, and I can't stop the plane from going down anyway. And I shit you not, Nicole, very much as when I finished the Sarno book and how I felt, but this was years earlier. I just kind of looked at it internally and I had just said like, okay, if this goes down, I can't do anything about it. And my heart slowed down. My palms stopped sweating. My freak out stopped happening. And I have not been afraid of flying since then. So I had the same approach and thought and kind of shift in perspective about 3 months ago with COVID. Again, didn't change behaviors, but I just said, if it enters the house, like it is what it is and we'll be okay. You know, whatever happens, we'll be okay. And, you know, up to the point of death, we will be okay, because this is just, you know, I can't stop an airborne virus. There's nothing I can do about it. We get a call from Audrey's school, my youngest, about 3 weeks ago, and someone had tested positive in her class. The class closed. A couple days later, Audrey tests positive, and then Zoe tests positive, and then Jenny tests positive, and then I test negative. I've tested negative 4 times. I haven't had one symptom. The girls in the house, Audrey had a very short recovery. Zoe had a very short recovery. Jenny struggled a little bit for 8 or 9 days. I did not have a single symptom. And so maybe this is shifting into a different conversation around like the immune response with when it relates to mind body. But part of me wonders, hey, like, Jenny and I were set up for exactly the same level of success with the virus. One of us got it. One of us did not. I took care of three COVID patients with no mask for 10 days and didn't get it. And part of me almost wonders, like, is there an element of like a surrender and finding peace and being okay with it, where symptoms just either don't happen? You know, maybe I did have it and I just never had a symptom. Maybe my immune system was really super ramped up because, again, my nervous system was okay with whatever the outcome was. I guess you hear a story like that. If you were my therapist, how would you rationalize that?
Well, you know, I'm going to be really careful how I answer this, because not because I'm scared ever to say anything,
yeah,
but because I really only speak from places where I understand something. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be really clear that I have no freaking idea with this virus, why it does what it does. My daughter just called me from college not an hour ago to tell me that her roommate, who she said she had spent 3 days straight with, had COVID, no symptoms, just had a test for like some class she had to go to. They all had to, you know, take a test, and she was positive and asymptomatic. And so far, my daughter has tested negative. I don't know why. You know, everybody's been vaccinated, everybody's been boosted in that group of friends. Yeah. So I guess though, having said that, because I really always want to be very authentic when it comes to what I know and what I don't know, I will tell you that a long time ago, I shifted, and I'm not going to talk about COVID, I'm going to talk about quote unquote getting sick. I used to get sick all the time. I would get this little tickle in my throat, and then I would panic and I would start to pre-grieve what it was that I was going to miss, or what it was that was going to screw it up. And, you know, and I would worry about what if I was going to give it to the kids, and then what they were going to, you know, what kind of inconvenience it would be. And I would get really, really all wound up about it. And it's sort of like what you say about the airplane. I don't know, like, what came over me or when it happened, but it was many years ago at this point, at least 5 or 6 years ago or even more. I just made a decision. Oh, well, I don't care. I don't care if I get sick or not. I mean, I care because, like, I don't want to be in that inconvenience. But the truth of the matter is, whatever. People get sick. It's inconvenient. It's unpleasant. It's annoying. Yes, things have to get canceled. So be it. Such is life. You know, complete surrender and acceptance. And when I tell you, I shit you not, like, I don't know the last time I was sick. I just don't get sick anymore.
Yeah.
So now, can I really draw a scientific line? Well, I mean, I can in the world of mind-body medicine, which has been studied and is, you know, being worked by doctors and practitioners all over the world that I am in constant contact with, it is certain that the immune response in general is strengthened by a nervous system that is regulated. So not in fight or flight. When you are calm about something, your immune system is boldened to be in its best space. When you are freaking out about something, that stress lowers your immune response and you're susceptible to whatever, you know, germ is flying past your nose. So that's true. But, you know, I think it's just almost, it's more circumstantial what you and I are talking about right now. But it's worth the point that, you know, our perception is our reality. And the fact that we have some level of control, at least in the dialogue we start having between in our own minds about, you know, how important is it? How much am I going to give my energy to stressing about something that I can't control? You know?
Yeah, I definitely do know. What about, so family relationships are so families intertwine and they fight about everything. They can find something to argue about. And like a couple of years ago, it was like, there's a lot of families in the United States and across the world that, based on like the United States election and these two old guys going at it for the presidency, there's plenty of family members who don't talk at all because of that election. Yeah. And it you know, there's so much polarization, period. I'm in a current instance where one of my siblings, like, when he had heard that my perspective had changed, and again, my behaviors did not, but my perspective had changed, he had just said that it was a luxury to think that way, and essentially that I was being reckless. Him and I have not talked since Christmas Eve. because of that. And like, you know, he's one of these people that he posts on Facebook about the boogeyman of COVID all the time, at least once a day. And then my dad got it. So our dad got it. He didn't call my dad. And then I feel like you're not my therapist, but that's sort of what this is for the moment. Cause I want to get into like family dynamics and relationships and stuff. But, and then my entire family got it and he knew, but didn't say anything. There was no text. There was no call. Are the kids okay? Is Jenny okay? Like there, you know, there was none of that. So I don't know how to approach people like that, that are so fearful of this thing now, especially if I've sort of come out now and been like, look, like it is what it is and whatever happens, happens, but it makes no sense. And it does me no good to be freaked out about this because again, it's airborne. I could step like Whoopi Goldberg was on The View a couple weeks ago saying, I think that I literally just opened the kitchen window and I got COVID. So, there's lots of stories of people that I know that have gotten sick that, you know, they didn't go anywhere. They sit at home, triple mask. They order DoorDash. They don't go out. They work from home. They don't have any kids, you know, and people are catching it somehow. So, I guess like, is there any advice maybe for people that are having tumultuous times with family members or with friends on maybe just kind of how they're approaching this as a whole? I don't know. Do you have any commentary or context on that? Like as I talk about those kinds of things, because I've heard you talk about family relationships on the show interviewing people before, but maybe not on this particular topic.
Yeah, I do have a comment on it. And you know what? I think that with any alarming situation, and you know, as you opened the conversation, we've been in sort of an alarming mindset for 2 years. In any alarming situation, our most primitive coping mechanisms come to the fore. And for whatever reason, your brother, it's your brother, right?
Yep.
That you're speaking about. Yep. Your brother is a person who probably deals with his fear with his tool of control. And of course, I believe that the tool of control is very empty because I think that we become so immersed in what we believe we can control or what we delude ourselves into believing we can control as a way to achieve some level of a perception of safety. And unfortunately, that can really bleed into our relationships. And so the first thing, now let's keep in mind, this is not my brother. And so it's very easy for me to say the things I'm saying right now, but I do know that when relationships are personal, it's not just this moment that is happening between you and he, it's every moment before and every moment that you have felt some conflict with him will come out in these moments. And so, you know, there's no way to ever look at something with a clear lens when it's your own family. But for me, what I would say is, listen, we are in a state of exhaustion and fatigue. We are fatigued. We are emotionally, spiritually, and actually fatigued from 2 years of dealing with this epic bullshit, you know, and all that it has brought. And some of it has been totally tragic. I mean, there are people that have lost members of their family way, way too young and not been able to say goodbye and all the things that we've lived through. So not only have some of us had that level of tragedy, but I'd say there's probably not anyone that I've met that hasn't at least witnessed it via TV or internet or posting on something, just the humanity of what we've been through. And then, of course, there's our personalities, you know, similar to TMS theory, which is we have to filter all of this through our natural given personalities. And some of us are pretty high strung and really scared and fear-based. And I happen not to be a person that is high strung in that way, but I have many friends that are, and I've watched them struggle. And so anyway, I guess what I'm saying, because it's not my brother, is that I can have a lot of compassion for the whole situation. And I always challenge myself in moments where I am triggered, meaning if it's my own family or somebody who's personally, you know, attacking me or neglecting me in the sense of not calling on to see how your family is, I try to challenge myself to press the pause, to step back, and to find the humanity and the compassion in the situation. And I'm able to. And when I do, I feel better. Because, you know, that it's the old adage of everybody is fighting their own silent battle. And it's true. And so perhaps, you know, you're asking me to comment on it. Your brother's fear is so great for his own personal lack of control, that even asking after your family feels too dangerous. And I'm sad for him about that, because that is a real barrier to human connection. And also, you know, in terms of intellectually, you know, when somebody says, well, you don't agree with me, and I can't, then I can't interact with you. That's just fear. If you scratch the surface of anger, there's always fear. Fear that you're not going to get what you need, or fear that you're going to lose what you have, or fear that you're going to get what you don't want. And those are the three big fears. And so I just see a lot of that going on in the situation. I don't know if that helps, but that's my perspective.
Yeah, it does. And I think you're correct for everything that you said in that. You know, another thing that that I want to chat about. So you did an interview, I think the guy's name was Kurt. He was a pediatric dentist. Yeah. It dropped a month or so ago, maybe a couple of months ago. He had gotten COVID, had long haul symptoms. And I think he had had like a Dr. Sarno recovery story years prior for something else. And applied kind of that. He found you, he applied a lot of the stuff that you were saying to the long haul idea. And I was having a conversation with my buddy, Brad, and he's kind of like my TMS buddy. Like if I have like a symptom arise, like I'll message him. Same thing with him to me. And it's just two guys talking about their feelings. And that's, you know, that's what we do.
it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. and we were talking the other day and I had said, okay, so like we had ulcers in the 80s and the 90s, and then we had carpal tunnel and back pain is on, all these things are on the rise. And Kurt had made this comment where he had said basically, I don't think he was talking about long haul specifically, but he was saying essentially like the impacts of the pandemic itself having a residual wave that's going to last years and years and years. So how does, in your experience so far, because long haul COVID, I hear about it way too much. And I kind of just think like, is this like ulcers? And then people kind of got over the ulcer thing when the collective conscience realized, hey, this is like a stress derivative. Can you talk a little bit about the long haul part of the equation in your experience and what you know about it so far?
Okay. So yes, I can. And once again, I'm going to be very careful here to say it like the whole thing, because I could easily say yes. I think long COVID is 2022's version of ulcers, but it's not that simple. And now that I'm grown up, and when I say grown up, I mean like I'm more grown up than I was last year, and last year I was more grown up than I was the year before. As I grow into this work, I really have become so much more able to see the nuance in it. And what I mean by that is I would say 10 years ago, I was accused of being arrogant when it came to TMS because I was so certain. And it was also coming from a real passionate desperation to help people, where I'd be like, no, the back pain isn't, you know, I would never say it isn't real, but I would say like, you know, it's not in your back. Don't you get it? Don't you understand? The slip disc, it doesn't matter. And like, it wasn't taking into account people's suffering that it, you know, so I really have grown into a much more nuanced way to approach this. So having said that, long haul COVID is real in that for whatever reason, there is a trigger that is set off by this virus that causes a host of symptoms. I know that there's like hundreds of symptoms that have been attributed to long COVID, but I really do think there's about 10 that are pretty ubiquitous. Headaches, tightness of chest, chest pains, fatigue, brain fog. Those are the ones that are coming to mind. And I also want to make sure to delineate long COVID from people who have their bodies damaged by COVID illness, meaning there are people that have like heart, scarring around the heart muscle. You know, that's not long COVID. That is, you know, an injury from having suffered through a disease. There's some people that have lung damage.
Maybe I should have differentiated. So, right. What I'm talking about is exactly what you're saying. Like I keep seeing articles where it will say somebody has COVID, they recover in, you know, 10 days, and then weeks to months later, their symptoms start coming back. It becomes long haul, but they're testing negative for the virus. That's more what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah. And I know that I know what you're talking about. It's just like, this is so important for people to get. And the reason I think I'm so careful these days is because I don't want to alienate anybody. I am so passionate about people getting well and so passionate about people understanding that the power of wellness is so squarely in their hands that if anybody hears something that I say and thinks, oh, well, she's dismissing, you know, my struggle, then that's that. It's a person I can't reach. So I really want to be clear that whatever's happening in long COVID, which not one doctor on the planet can fully explain, is something that is real and true. Nobody's making it up. Nobody's hysterical. Nobody's dramatic. Nobody is creating it in their mind. It's nobody's fault. It just like many, many different varieties of TMS. And so having said that, I understand very personally the power of suggestibility of the human brain. And I'm going to tell a quick story to illustrate that, because I want people to understand this is not me saying something because I've heard somebody else say it or I had a couple clients say it. This is stuff that has happened to me many, many times. I have worked with people. So I'm no longer in private practice, but I have for years I was. So we're at 2022. So for at least 22 years, because that's when I got my graduate degree, I have been working individually with people and I have gotten all y'all's illnesses. I got them all. I've had fibromyalgia for a night. I had irritable bowel when I was working with someone who was in severe irritable bowel problems. Like, it's crazy. It's fascinating what can happen. So my story that I thought is really, really funny is I was working with a client once, and she was very, very, I say this with kindness, very disordered human being, very, very difficult person to work with, very argumentative, very unkind. She had what I had diagnosed as a borderline personality. She was just very challenging for me. And in my history of being a therapist, I had never done what I did once with her, which is we were on a phone session. I saw her sometimes in person. We were in different states, but we were on a phone session once and I hung up and I literally burst into tears, sobbing. And I didn't even know why. It was like I just felt so bad about myself. So just to illustrate how intense this relationship was, but I stuck with her and I was really trying to help her. And her biggest complaint, TMS-wise, was severe knee pain in her right knee. And she had been to all the doctors and done all the treatments. I think she had had a couple of unsuccessful knee surgeries. And so that's the reason she found me. But really, underneath it all, she was almost completely unable to see herself because of her mental illness. And so so I'm working with her. I'm struggling with her. And one of those evenings, I get home from work and I'm running up the stairs to, you know, I'm a runner. I run everywhere.
Yeah.
I like to get places quick. So I'm always running up and down my stairs. I live in a townhouse. So there's three sets of stairs. And I was turning the second corner, running from the landing to my bedroom. And I felt a pain that was one of the most significant physical pains I've ever felt. It took my breath away and it was in my right knee. And I went down. I literally went down. I fell, my whole body fell onto the stairs because my knee went out from underneath me. And I felt that level of pain. And I laid on the landing of my stairs and Eddie, I laughed. Oh, did I laugh? I was rolling with laughter. I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me right now with this. And I just shook it off and I took a really deep inhale and exhale. And I said, nothing is wrong with your knee, my love. Just relax. And I got up slowly and I walked upstairs and it never came again. And it didn't come again that day and it didn't come again since. And so what I'm saying here, and I think you know where I'm going with this, is that when we are in a state of high emotional trigger, I was feeling during that relationship incredibly self-conscious, incredibly self-doubting. It was just so difficult to help this person and it was really triggering me. And I got a sense of her. She entered into me and that has happened to me so many times. I mean, countless times. That's just sort of a dramatic example of it that I know. It is so possible in the heightened state of panic that we are all in with COVID that when you have COVID, you already start looking for those long haul syndrome symptoms. You're already paying attention to the news and you're paying attention. Now you're looking it up on Dr. Google, which is the worst space to spend your time. And so I just want people to have respect for the suggestibility of the human brain. It's just, we have to live in reverence to it because it's just so powerful. And, I think if each of us looks within ourselves for a few minutes, we can find places in our lives where we have had those kinds of things happen, even in the most mild sense. Like if you're in the room and everyone starts yawning, you yawn. But yawning is a really physiological experience. It has nothing to do with anyone else when you yawn, but you can catch a yawn from someone else. So just kind of, that dialogue to me speaks to your question.
The power of suggestion thing. When I was in the midst in the throes of, because this might relate to some people, especially if they're sports fans or they're fans of athletics in any sense. So when I was having kind of all these just weird symptoms, ones that were very serious, and it, led me to go get imaging, which showed serious problems, quote unquote. But problems with my hands, problem with my grip, problem with my strength, all that kind of stuff. I've been a big pro wrestling nerd for years since I was a little kid, like watching it with my dad and my brothers. And, it was very in is not really the right sentence, but there was a period of time in the early and mid 2000s where it seemed like every big time wrestler was breaking their neck. They were going and having neck surgery done. Right. And then I started having problems with my neck when I hit about 30 years old. And, as I look back and I kind of think, like power of suggestion wise, this is the thing that I've probably spent more cumulative hours watching than anything in, in my history, even more than Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm or any of those, is this thing with the neck. And so that's the kind of stuff that I think about also with the power of suggestion, is to me relates to what it is that you're talking about, which everybody would be vulnerable to that just because it is a human condition.
Yeah. And also fear is real. I mean, sometimes fear is so real and so it like overtakes us that even though you know that it's not helpful to be in that state, you can't necessarily do anything about it. And that's where I have to put in a little plug for meditation. Because, guys, all of us, all you guys out there, we need better control of our brains. They don't always listen to us because fear is so big and fear informs the nervous system and helps us stay alive. And so I will say that personally, my ability to overcome my brain when it's in its least fabulous processing is through meditation. I'll give you a quick example. I'm a lifelong insomniac. I started insomnia when I was in second grade. I have such memories of watching that clock flap, that old 80s. I mean, you're a baby. You probably don't remember this clock, but it was like a long, rectangular box, and like the numbers would flip and flip. And when it was like a whole hour, all the numbers would flip and you could hear it. You can hear the little flaps when the numbers would switch. And I would watch it all night in horror that I wasn't going to be able to be okay tomorrow at school. So it's an old wound of how many years that insomnia has really been a struggle for me. And through meditation and through my TMS work, I haven't really struggled with it deeply for many years. And two nights ago, for whatever reason, and there's no way to really understand why, at 3:30 in the morning, I was up and I was just up and I was really, really not psyched about it. And I was having all those old triggers, those old fears and feelings. And so I got through the night. And so last night, I woke up in the middle of the night and I had to pee because I always do. Shout out to all you ladies who are approaching 50. And I got back into bed and I felt the fear. I felt it come and tap on my shoulder and say, this happened last night. What if it happens tonight? What if it happens to you forever? What if this is what's happening? And it's that voice is so real, even for me. That's why I'm always trying to share my vulnerability with you guys. Cause like, it's even for me, this stuff is real. I'm still a human being. My brain is still the brain. And so I just laid there and I meditated. I did my meditative breathing as I laid there. And I said, just lay here and just be. Whatever the brain thinks, let it flow, right? I mean, I don't know if you've ever done any meditation, Eddie, but you just pretend that your thoughts are a river and the brain is the riverbank and your consciousness is the riverbank and your thoughts are going down the river and just let them go. And I fell asleep. And I woke up this morning and here we are and I feel great. So I guess what I'm saying is we have to respect our fear. We have to respect it because it is a very integral function of the brain and the nervous system. But we also have to know that if we create an observational self, which is the reason for all therapy and the reason for all personal growth, is to have a pause between a stimulus and our reaction, and we can take that space and occupy it, then we have power because then we have choices. So there's my two cents on that.
I do like regular meditation. I think of it as more of like a somatic type of work, but the way that people explain how they, and everybody thinks they're terrible at meditation. I remember, I think even like, cause before your prescription for a long time, and it's written in your book, was to do journal speak, and that was it. And then I remember just in the last like 3 or 4 years, I feel like you added on the
true story.
Yeah. You added on the meditation as a part of that prescription. And so, which I think is wonderful, because there have been times where if I write and I'm writing, like I always call it angry rap music. That's a lot of time how my journaling sounds, is like, what would Eminem say if he was doing a rap battle with somebody in the mid 1990s in an alley somewhere? He would be tearing them to shreds. And that's how I treat journaling in a lot of ways. But then when I'm done, it's kind of like, whoo, that was a lot of really bad stuff I just said. And I think I think meditation has a really great place for that. But yes, absolutely. And I was going to ask, like, okay, you're laying there at night and you start thinking about, I'm going to be so tired tomorrow, and then I'm not going to have time to take Charlotte to dance. And I'm like, you know, kind of all these things that probably start to manifest. And how do you actually like grab Nicole by the arm and say, nope, like we're not going down that road. And it's meditation is your answer. So you stole that thunder from me.
Well, you know, the thing is, here's why meditation is the answer. Because no amount of thinking, especially in a difficult place like that, is going to help. No amount of thinking.
Yep.
So you say, how am I going to get Charlotte to dance tomorrow? How am I going to deal with my busy day? I could try to plan it, right? So that would be a very like brain-centered thing to do. Okay, well, if you can't do it, you know, you could ask your mom for help. But, you know, then now I'm at my mom. Well, you know, I don't know if she really likes to drive at night anymore. Wow, she's getting old. Huh? Well, this might be difficult. Oh, well, you're the only child. When she gets really old, it's all on you. I mean, imagine that whole line of thinking is not helpful.
Yeah.
So thinking yourself out of situations is just really not helpful in those kind of scenarios. And so that's why I love the concept of meditation, because meditation is the anti-thinking. It's letting all those thoughts say, hey, I see you. Go ahead. Flow down the river. You'll be back. Don't worry about it. And that's where the brain can relax. That's a space of safety.
You know, what happens to me too, is like, it's almost like a divided mind. And that's a poor pun because I'm stealing Dr. Sarno's last book. But, when I'm doing my practice, which in a lot of ways is like, I'm trying to almost feel my heart, if that makes any sense. So like I'm experiencing just like really just kind of raw feelings and sensations throughout my body. And then a thought or a few thoughts will start to come up, and it could be fear-based or anger or things like that. And it's almost like I'm watching these thoughts go by and I'm like, okay, yeah, I see you, but I really got to feel this stuff right now. And that's kind of how I've talked about this before, but 2 or 3 or 4 minutes of this feels like I was through a war when I'm done. It's like that every single time. And if I get really good at it and I do, you know, 20 straight days of it or 30 straight days of it, the way that I know that it's really, really working is that when I get to the end of that 20 or 30 days, it doesn't feel as much like I've been in a war as it did those first 10 or 15 days. And I don't know what's going on physiologically. I don't know like what that means or how to even define it, but that's been my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that like anything, you know, what we resist persists. So if we just let ourselves do the hard thing, whatever that is, whether it be journaling or meditation or feeling our feelings or being present or pausing, you know, those are hard things. And when we endeavor to do them, it only gets easier.
You know, I got a question from a podcast listener, and this kind of jumps back when I had announced that I was doing this with you, and pretty much everybody is very pumped. Well, everybody is pumped to hear this. One person, Susan, though, did submit a question, and I think this is an interesting one. And again, we'll do the disclaimer, the same one they've done a couple of times, which I think is great, which is like not wanting to speak out of turn because you know what I mean? Like, yeah, anyway, you'll know what I mean. So Susan had said, I've been wondering if an asymptomatic person with TMS tendencies, so somebody that's had TMS symptoms in the past, test positive for COVID, might then this manifest into all the expected symptoms? So you have somebody that doesn't have symptoms at all, takes a test, incidentally sees that it's positive. Can that person then just start experiencing symptoms, which I imagine is, I would say 100% true. And if that's going to happen, is it better to just not test at all? If you feel comfortable answering that.
I can answer it, but I don't know if it's going to be very satisfying to you. The last thing you said, I will definitely say it is absolutely, and this is my opinion. Everything is just my opinion. I mean, I am an expert on some things, but I always say, you know, I'm only speaking from my own experience. I think 100% test at all, because we're responsible for one another. Mm-hmm. In this society. And, you know, I just lived through this an hour ago. Izzy called me from college. She said, my roommate is positive. And I said, can you get access to a test? And she said, I have one sitting in front of me. Should I take it? And I know what she was saying. I mean, she's a kid. Should I take it? If I have COVID, it's going to be really inconvenient, Mom. And yeah. I feel great. Should I take it? And I said, 1,000,000%. Yes. Hang up the phone with me and take it. Because if she's asymptomatic, she goes into a class, even masked, and gives it to her 65-year-old professor and he dies.
Yeah.
You know, it's our responsibility to take care of one another. So yes, 100%. I believe, this is only speaking for myself, it is important to test no matter what. Because we need to be kind and to be considerate as a society. Having said that, I think it's very fascinating, the question that she posed. I don't know the answer, but I mean, if I'm just going to say, you know, completely with the disclaimer that I have no idea what the answer is, it seems to make a tremendous amount of sense that you could manifest the symptoms. I mean, I've just seen too much. I've seen too much over the years of people manifesting symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of my mother's favorite stories, when I say favorite in quotes, is when my father and my mother were dating before I was born, they were at a dinner party once and some guy had recently had a heart attack and he was better and he was sitting next to my father and he proceeded during dinner and drinks and probably many drinks, knowing my dad, to tell my father in detail what it felt like to have a heart attack. And my father had a heart attack that night, which he didn't, but he did. And they ended up in the hospital. And it was a panic attack.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is like, yeah, this is the human brain does this stuff. You know, I mean, we manifest. We do. And it's just undeniable that it happens. So your listener's question is well taken. I just don't know the answer.
So I can give some context on this. I don't know if you've had – if you don't want to answer, that's fine. Have you had COVID in your house?
I have not.
You have not.
I have not. And, and I am still astounded. If you see all those memes with those like incredible dancers.
Yeah, unicorns.
That are like
– yeah.
They're so funny. So for anyone who hasn't seen them, it's like a picture of somebody who's like – doing some sort of like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's sort of like a kung fu kind of dance with like a stick.
Yeah.
And like there's another person right in their face that seems to be able to dodge and avoid the stick at all costs. And it's like, these are the people who haven't gotten COVID. I do not understand why. I know tons of people who have had it. I have, my best friend had it. She was in my son's room with him with the door closed on his piano, giving him a piano lesson. And then she and I went out to dinner and shared food from the same plate. And that night she woke up with symptoms, had decently bad COVID for a week, and Oliver and I didn't get it. So I don't know why.
That's killer. I'm going to give Susan the inverse, sort of the inverse of what it is that she had asked. So she had asked, again, I've been wondering if an asymptomatic person with TMS tendencies test positive for COVID, might they just start manifesting symptoms? So again, an asymptomatic person, but has had TMS issues in the past, and then they just start getting symptoms because they saw the positive test. So I have the inverse of that that has occurred several times. I've tested 5 times since Audrey had her positive test, which at this point was almost 2 weeks ago. And essentially what would happen is like, you know, we all got tested as a family and then mine came back negative and everybody else was positive. And I would, as the week would go on, I would feel tightness in my ribs. So I didn't have any experience with tightness in my ribs until you and Kurt talked about it. His name Kurt? You and that guy.
His name is Kurt.
Since you and Kurt literally said tightness in the ribs in that podcast, later that day, I started feeling tightness in the ribs, so power of suggestion. And I'd asked Jenny, I'm like, okay, I took one 2 days ago. Do I go get tested again? And she was like, you probably have it. So, you should get. So I go and I get tested. It's negative again. As soon as I get that result, that tightness in the ribs is gone.
Tightness goes away.
Yeah. This has happened 3 or 4 times in the last 2 weeks. And it's a shame because it's like it's $11 every time I get one of these stupid symptoms that doesn't seem to amount to anything. But that's what came to mind when Susan posted that, is that I've got the exact opposite thing going on, and I have had TMS tendencies in the past and still do today because I'm human and it's the human condition, which I steal from you constantly. It's interesting. I guess maybe wrapping up is, a couple of things. I've seen many stories on social media and TikTok in particular. Somebody keeps experiencing symptoms or feeling them, and they take, they take one test, it's negative. Like, they'll go 7 or 8 or 9 tests, they'll all be negative, and they just keep testing until they find something. And the thing that immediately comes to my mind was how many different doctors and diagnoses and how many different images I went to go get until they found a serious problem. And then I felt like once I find this serious problem, I will be satisfied because I'll know that I have something. And I know it's not exactly the same thing because I can't transmit my shitty EMG and MRI to somebody else, whereas with a virus, you can. So do you have any commentary on kind of this, continuous search or thinking about, hey, do I have this symptom? What should I do in that moment? Like if somebody's experiencing some illness symptoms and they get a negative test for COVID or several, how can they deal with that internally? And I think your answer is going to be similar to the insomnia story earlier, but you tell me.
Well, okay. So the fact that we're kind of getting to the end of the interview, let's get a little philosophical. Okay. Let's help people a little bit in terms of how to live a life at least a little closer to peace and personal freedom. So what you're saying is, if you keep looking and you keep looking and you keep looking, eventually you're going to find something you don't like.
Yep.
And it's like, what empowers this journey of looking? And so it's a little different with COVID than it is with chronic pain, illness, and conditions, because like I said, this is a very slippery slope because we are also responsible for one another. So if you are exposed to COVID and then you start feeling COVID-ish symptoms, should you continue to test reasonably? Yes. It is the responsible thing, because if you're the one doing the grocery runs and if you're the one, wanting to meet a friend at a restaurant, and once you get to the table, you're going to be unmasked, these are important things for us to do as a society. So, I also think we have to do it within reason. If you are exposed to COVID and 2 weeks later, after 17 negative tests, you're still getting a symptom here and there and you're running to get tested, let's have a pause there and let's take a look at why we seek and seek and seek to be told by someone else what is, quote, wrong with us. And here's where, like I said, philosophically, I like to bring a lot of connection to us sweet, sweet little human beings, soft-shelled, walking around, just wanting to be okay, wanting to be taken care of, wanting to be connected with, wanting to feel like we're not alone. Half the reason that people run from doctor to doctor to doctor is honestly just to continue to have someone in it with them.
Yeah.
Because it feels so scary and it feels so lonely and it feels so isolating to be like, nothing's wrong with me. Nobody's finding anything wrong with me, but I'm suffering here, which is why I'm trying to stand loud and proud on, my little soapbox and say, I'm here for you. You don't have to be sick when you hang out with me. We could be on our way to getting better. But, I really think that's what it's fueled by. I think it's fueled by two things. I think it's fueled by, one, our desperation as human beings to seek connection and togetherness and be cared for. And the other thing is our terror at the thought of the fact that the work resides within us. That is terrifying. Terrifying because nobody wants to do the work, myself included, you included. Nobody wants to do the freaking work. It's exhausting. It's scary. the underlying fear of what if this doesn't work for me, or what if I'm the exception to the rule, is one that I know a lot of people struggle with. And so it's really about continuing to acknowledge with self-compassion and kindness and patience our humanity, and the fact that we will, without a check on it, we will be compelled to continue searching and testing and asking other people to weigh in and researching on the internet. Because the thought that really what we need to do is press the big fat pause, take a look at ourselves, and first of all, believe the outlandish thing that I'm suggesting and that you're suggesting, which is human emotion and stored trauma can literally lead to physical reactions in the body. I mean, that's sometimes an incredibly difficult bridge for people to cross, but it's true. And so, first of all, there's the barrier of crossing that. And then it's knowing that, okay, well, if that indeed is true, then nobody is ever going to be able to fix me but me. And, you know, my guru Oprah is always saying that. I'm listening to her book right now. I was just running on the treadmill an hour before we got on this call, and I was listening to this book Oprah wrote called, I think it's called What I Know for Sure, something like that. It's a memoir kind of thing. And her advice is exactly how I live my life, which is as soon as you stop waiting for somebody else to rescue you, you have all the power. And it's incredible the power you have to change and to be able to occupy the best space in your own life. So I really think, Eddie, my reflection on what you said is, as human beings, we are compelled to continue looking out of need for connection and fear that we're alone, but we're not alone. And we don't need that kind of connection. And there's so much healthy connection to be gotten, you know, and I mean, if anybody's looking for any way to connect in my community, on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, but in so many of these mind-body communities and Incurable and yours, and like, it's just, there's just better ways to do it, I guess is what I would say. And as it relates to COVID, go easy on yourself, go easy, and forgive yourself when you're in that space of fear, because it's so human. And also allow yourself to be empowered to think what you think, like you're doing with your brother. Like, he might not agree with you, but your thinking, which I think is incredibly healthy, of acceptance is, however this goes, it's okay for me. If everybody gets really sick, we will handle it. If we die, we will handle it. Like, I know that sounds crazy, but that kind of posture is what the nervous system needs to calm down. It's what the immune system needs to be bolstered. So, you know, however you get there is the way to get there.
I mean, and I'll tell you that attitude, you know how much better of a motorcyclist, off-road motorcyclist, skateboarder, just saying, hey, if like Jenny thinks I'm nuts when I sit, usually about every February or March, and I'll sit on the couch and I'll just watch hours of people of like really bad things happening on motorcycles. And I think it's sort of like, you know, to me, it brings it into perspective where I say, whatever happens, happens. I don't know. It, to me, I related a lot to one of my favorite movies, probably my second favorite movie ever, is Point Break with Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves.
Good one.
And he's just, Patrick Swayze's character has such a, his attitude around surfing is very much just kind of how I think about, obviously, I mean, not of everything, but I see a lot of mirrors around, you know, again, whatever happens, happens, which, you know, not designed to sound crass. The other thing too, that I want to make sure that I say, because you had so emphatically said, like, look, emotional processes leading to a very strong physiological response. Don't forget that, like, in every book that Dr. Sono wrote, he said that pain from TMS is the most painful thing he's ever experienced in medicine, like by far. And I think that that's a, I've recently come across like old posts that I would make when I first started learning about this stuff. And I was so standing on the rooftops and talking about it, which I very seldom do now out loud, because it rubs so many people the wrong way. But I would look through at some of the comments and they're like, so I just think happy thoughts and I'll get rid of my issues, whatever. And I would kind of go back and forth. No, it's not what I'm saying at all, but that's kind of what the assumption was. But yeah, Sarna would say, like, this is the most painful thing in medicine, is this. And I know, because I felt it and you felt it too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pain. I mean, when my back was out, I couldn't walk. There was no way.
Yeah.
So I understand. Yeah, absolutely.
The Cure for Chronic Pain, it is on all major podcast providers, drops on Fridays. Is there anything else that you want to leave us with?
What do I want to leave you with? I don't know, man. Just you're not alone. And those of you who are listening to Eddie's podcast definitely have heard him discuss me. If you want to hear more about what I do, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and new stuff every day on Instagram at Nicole Sachs LCSW. And yeah, man, I'm just here for you. I just want people to know that they're not alone and that there are healthy ways to connect and ways that don't require them to continue to give away their power.
Your socials, by the way, it's Nicole Sachs LCSW on Instagram, right?
Yes.
Jenny has started sending me stuff that you've written or posted lately. She started following you maybe a month ago, and she's blown away. And it took me 4 years to get her to open a Brené Brown book. And now she not only sent me to the store to buy her Brené Brown book when she was sick, but she has started following you and loves your content, and the stuff you put out is amazing. So thank you for coming back. I know it's not the last time, but thank you again. I think you're one of the world's biggest gifts, and I fanboy quite often around a lot of stuff that you say and post. So thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure, Eddie.